From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The streets of Barcelona are filled with masses of people this week in the aftermath of a referendum vote for independence that was deeply marred by violence. Trade unions are leading the general strike in the Catalonian capital and other parts of the autonomous Spanish province. Spanish police are under fire for well-documented acts of violence aimed at voters on Sunday. Turnout for the highly anticipated referendum was on the low side, but of the approximately 2 million people who voted, it's being reported that 90% chose independence from Spain. The Spanish government had declared the vote illegal and unconstitutional. My guest is Sebastian Faber, a professor of Hispanic Studies at Oberlin College. He's the author of the forthcoming Memory Battles and the Spanish Civil War and co-author of a recent article in The Nation magazine called Have Spain and Catalonia Reached a Point of No Return? Welcome to the program, Sebastian.
Sure, you're welcome.
So first, let's talk about what actually happened on Sunday before we can discuss what is to happen now. There have been images and videos of very severe violence by Spanish police against people trying to vote. Can you give a sense of overall, a couple of days after it happened, how you would describe this vote?
I think the bottom line is that the vote was a triumph for the government of Catalonia, which has said for a long time that it would go ahead with the referendum, as against the central government of Madrid, which said for a long time that the referendum would not happen, and that it would do whatever necessary to prevent it from happening. What we saw on Sunday was more than 2 million people voting. That means the referendum happens, as far as the government of Catalonia is concerned. While we saw at the same time the central government in Madrid trying to prevent the voting from happening and failing at preventing it, while at the same time producing images that I agree are truly shocking, of riot police and other security forces using extreme forms of violence on citizens who really are just trying to vote or trying to prevent the polling stations from being closed. So in the standoff between Madrid and Barcelona, which has been going on for years now, Sunday was a victory, I would say, for Catalonia, which is insisting really on its right for self-determination. It's true that the referendum was about independence and that 90% of the votes were cast in favor of independence. But what's really at stake in the between the majority of Catalans and Madrid is whether Catalonia has the right to decide on its own whether it wants to stay in Spain or whether it wants to be independent.
Why do you think so many people didn't turn out to vote? Was there a sense that you got that Spain's argument moved some Catalonians, and or police violence kept people home?
I think the police violence kept some people home, but I think the majority of the people who stayed home did so because they either opposed the whole idea of the referendum, or they opposed the idea of this referendum because it was not formally approved by the central government, and therefore its legal status was under question and has been under question. So about 80 or more than 80% of Catalan society who believe that Catalonia has the right to self-determination. However, many of those, about half of those 80%, have strong doubts about holding a referendum if it's not fully agreed on with the central government, and therefore doesn't have the full legal protections, the procedural aspects in place that are needed for the vote to be recognized in any formal way, be it at the national level or at the international level. Mm.
So does the Spanish government's position hold water? Do you, how do you assess it? President Mariano Rajoy had been adamant ahead of the vote and remains adamant that the vote was illegal and in violation of Spain's constitution. Was he right?
It is true that the current Spanish constitution, which was adopted in 1978, does not allow for secession or self-determination declares that the Spanish nation is indivisible, and that that the referenda can only be held at the state level and as issued by the state. So by the letter of the law, the letter of the Constitution, Rajoy is right. That said, the reality is that by now, a large majority of people in Catalonia believe they have the right to self-determination, and that many people in Catalonia do not feel they are respected or they belong in the Spanish state. That is a political reality, and that is a political reality that has been increasingly present over the past 7 years. All that time, the government of Madrid has done nothing to politically act on that reality. By holding on to the letter of the law, despite the fact that they're right, that the law, that the Constitution says what it says, they're hiding behind the Constitution to avoid their political responsibility, which is to find ways to talk, to sit down with the Catalan government and to acknowledge that Spain is a multinational nation in which the Catalans, as well as the Basque and the Galicians and the Valencians and all the other different nationalities within the Spanish state feel at home. By avoiding that responsibility, they really brought this onto themselves. I mean, they are, I would say, the main responsible actor in this drama that ended, like we saw yesterday on Sunday, in tragic scenes of violence. And that shows no sign of letting up at all. Today, as you said, the whole region is on strike. Thousands of people in the streets, generally pacifically, in a kind of celebratory fashion. They're singing, they're waving flags. And the response from Madrid, starting on Sunday, really, in their assessment of the situation in Catalonia, has been, I would say, really mind-boggling. On Sunday evening, the prime minister came out and stated the referendum has not happened, and everybody saw that 2.2 million people had voted. And he declared that he gave his thanks to the security forces, who he said had acted serenely and very positively. He didn't spend a second acknowledging the scenes that everybody had seen by then, of the violence perpetrated by security forces, especially riot police, on the citizens. Yesterday and today, too, the spokespersons for the central government in Madrid have insisted on this, I would say, reading that's disconnected from reality of what is going on in Catalonia. And every time their statements contradict what people are living and seeing, they put themselves more out of the game. They push the majority of or a large section of Catalan society further away from ever considering themselves as a part of Spain.
And a quick correction, it's Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy, not President, as I said earlier. You write that the Rajoy administration's disproportionate measures have, for many, conjured the specter of Spain's dictatorial past. Can you give us some of that historical context vis-a-vis Franco and how a unified Spain was considered sacred by him? And in many ways, people see Rajoy's strong position and refusal to back down in that same light.
Yeah, so the Spanish Civil War, which happened in the late 1930s, was about many things, but it was, among other things, about what kind of country Spain is, what kind of state Spain is. The Spanish Republic, which was proclaimed in 31, acknowledged Spain as a multinational state, and that manifested in the granting of limited forms of autonomy to some of the most nationally distinct regions in Spain, which are Catalonia, the Basque Country, and Galicia. At the end of the Spanish Civil War, which was won by a military coalition that tried to overthrow the Republic, and they succeeded in that. As a result, the Franco regime was instituted, which was strongly centralist and ideologically heavily wedded to the notion of, like you say, the sacred notion of Spain as a unified, Catholic, culturally homogenous nation and former empire. And as a result, in practice, any manifestations of national identity, be they at the level of language, at the level of culture, at the level of literature, whatever it be, or at the level of politics, were repressed by law in Spain between 1939 and 1975, which is when Franco died. When Spain then became a democracy in the late 1970s, the architects of that democracy decided that Spain's multinationality had to be come to terms with, and they devised a semi-federal structure of 17 autonomous regions, three of which are Catalonia, the Basque Country, and Galicia.
Right. Let's put this also into a bit of a broader regional context. I mean, there have been many movements for independence in various parts, in various countries, parts of the world. In the U.S., we see Puerto Rico, Hawaii. But in Europe, the one that maybe comes most to mind is the effort by the Scottish people to vote for independence. They had a very contentious vote as well that also lost. And in fact, the Scottish minister, Nicola Sturgeon, commented on the Catalonia vote recently, saying that, you know, you cannot just dismiss these 2 million voters. Perhaps, seeing the sort of sympathy or expressing sympathy for people that she can relate to. So how has what's happened in Catalonia been felt in and around the EU?
I think there's two levels. There's the level of the regions who feel similarly to Catalonia, that they don't quite fit within the state that they are a part of, Scotland being a good example. So there's this real solidarity among those regions in their struggles within Spain as well. For example, in the Basque Country is where the most immediate and the largest expressions of solidarity with Catalonia were expressed over the past couple of weeks. At the same time, I see a similar level of solidarity at the among the state governments who oversee these regions that might want to break away. And the European Union's, I would say, tepid and conservative response to what happened in Catalonia on Sunday, and the EU's refusal so far to acknowledge Catalonia's right to self-determination or to in any way endorse Catalonia's aspirations shows, I think, the fear and the worry among heads of state that a possible legal referendum in Catalonia, let alone independence, might set off a domino effect with other regions following suit or trying to do the same thing, starting with the Basque Country in Spain, but maybe also against Scotland, which wants to be back in the European Union after all.
Right. Let's talk about what happens next with the vote. I think it was always sort of accepted that whatever happened on Sunday was going to be a fairly symbolic vote, right? I mean, there was no real sense that the vote had gone through, that suddenly Catalonia would be independent and free. So what's next?
That's really hard to say. I think it's good to distinguish between the level of political leadership and the sentiments and aspirations among the people.
And will the president of the Catalan government face any consequences for moving ahead with what happened?
So the Catalan parliament in early September adopted a law that authorized itself, the parliament, to unilaterally declare independence within 48 hours of the official publication of the voting results, should those results in a majority favor independence, which is what they did. Hmm. So the option of a unilateral declaration of independence is on the table, and it may well happen this week or early next week. But at the same time, the Puigdemont, the president of Catalonia, has said that he is willing to hold off for now. And he's willing at any point to sit down with the Madrid government to talk, for dialogue without preconditions. What that signals is that for some of the main parties that have been pushing for independence, or at least pushing for the referendum, the threat of independence is really, in the end, a bargaining chip, point of leverage to negotiate a different kind of relationship between Catalonia and Spain, but within the Spanish state, so not going all the way to independence. That is, I think, true, especially for the party that Puigdemont is from, which is the Catholic conservative Catalan party, which is currently called the Democratic Party of Catalonia. The other two partners in that coalition that has been pushing for the referendum include the longstanding left Catalan Republicans, who have, of course, have nothing to do with American Republicans, but are are anti-monarchist, who have long stood for independence and long had that aspiration, and a smaller but powerful assembly-based left party, the CUP. And the left Republicans in the CUP, and especially their constituencies, really want independence, many of them. So anything less than independence, especially after Sunday's vote, where many regular citizens faced danger and faced violence in order to express their opinion, anything less than full independence may well be received as a defeat or even as a betrayal by those constituencies. So that coalition that has been pushing for the referendum, I think, is precarious in that sense. And the president of Catalonia, or the government of Catalonia, is facing a difficult situation as well. Whether they succeed in forcing Madrid to sit down and dialogue about a different kind of statute of autonomy, or whether they declare unilateral independence, the situation is not easy for them.
Right. So it was a high stakes political game to begin with, and now it certainly depends on how one side reacts. We'll see what plays out in the next few days and weeks with the situation in Catalonia. I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Sebastian.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure.
My guest is Sebastian Faber. He is a professor of Hispanic Studies at Oberlin College, author of the forthcoming book, Memory Battles and the Spanish Civil War. He's co-authored an article in The Nation magazine that we linked to called Have Spain and Catalonia Reached a Point of No Return? We've been talking about the Sunday referendum in Catalonia. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.